Good morning. It is Sunday, September 23rd, and you are listening to In the Wheelhouse. ITW is a weekly podcast on the Chicago Cubs and other ancillary topics. I'm Tom Hockney.
And I'm Leo Fontana. Today on In the Wheelhouse, we react to John Smoltz's take on needed changes to the sport of baseball, as well as the Boston Red Sox winning the AL East in the stadium of their ancient rival. We'll talk about Adrian Beltre's Hall of Fame prospects, and as always, we will talk about this week in the Chicago Cubs. Tom, how are you doing?
Today I'm about 67%.
Ooh, were you up late last night?
No, not really. I try to get a good night's sleep on the day of our shows, or the day before our shows, I should say. The normal time. I sleep very well, except during the night.
Listen, I wanted to tell you, you should call your bookie after this because I've handicapped the mayor's race in Chicago.
Okay, all right.
So now Toni Preckwinkle, I put her as the favorite at 3-2. Okay. Bill Daley is at 5-1. Gary Chico 9-1. McCarthy 15-1, and the rest of the field I put at 40-1.
So nice. Okay. That's not bad. Except I don't. I just have a funny feeling that the voters are going to reject another Daley. He's old, and even if he wasn't old, I just think that we've had enough Daleys in this city, and enough is enough. But I don't disagree with the rest of what you're saying. I think, personally, I've been kind of supportive of McCarthy. I know not a lot of people aren't, but I agree his chances seem remote, and it also seems as though, you know, you might want to get a bumper sticker or something that kind of says, I'm the only one in Chicago not running for mayor.
Exactly. Because, you know, you ought to announce, you know, you'd make a good mayor, Tom.
Yeah, exactly. And I would make a good mayor for about 2 days, and then the corruption would start to seep in.
Exactly. All right. So let's begin with what we're here for. And let's start with John Smoltz, who was in the news. This is the great starting pitcher and also great relief pitcher for the
Hall of Famer.
Exactly. And he suggests that baseball needs to make certain changes to make the game more popular. And he speaks specifically to the use of shifts, yep, which he wants to outlaw, which I'm kind of against.
I'm not. I completely agree with him. I completely agree with his thoughts on the changes. Every single one of them, I think he's spot on. And I think that here's what I would propose, and we should maybe just kind of tell our listener what those are. He wants to eliminate the shift. He wants to adopt a split season schedule.
Right.
That's the biggie. That means that there would be two parts of every season, a first half and a second half. Each one of those winners would face off in the playoffs. If the same team won both halves, they would get a bye. He wants to curtail the relentless use of relievers. He wants to stop the exploitation of the disabled list. But the biggest thing is to change the schedule and get rid of interleague play completely, which I know you support. I do support that.
I do support that, yeah.
He wants to go back to the old way of the schedule, get rid of the crosstown rivals, all that business. If they meet, they need to meet in the World Series, which is the way it should be. The reason why I think the issue about the shift and the reliever issue are kind of intertwined is that it's where analytics have been great for baseball for the last 20 years, but they're seeping into the game, and they're seeping into the game in my opinion, in a negative way. And so for a pitcher, a Hall of Fame pitcher, to say that he wants to eliminate the shift. And by the way, he's on the rules committee. This isn't just somebody just talking. This is somebody that not only he had, let's put it this way, they're talking about these things. And he makes a very veiled comment at the beginning of that article where he says changes are coming.
Wow.
So this is one of the rare times that I completely agree with everything that he says, because I think the shift is just ridiculous. However, you and I've talked about this before. I also think that hitters should hit against the shift.
They should. They should go the other way.
If somebody put the shift on me, I would practice 8 hours a day hitting it to the other side until I was good enough that made them think twice about it. I just think that There's just too much specialized stuff going on in baseball that and we're going to talk about something else in a second here about the so-called opener in games that Tampa Bay is utilizing. And I just think that that baseball did a really good thing in the late 90s when they went to interleague play just to try it.
To generate some interest, and we've gotten that, but now it's run its course.
So here's my thought. Why not try these things for 5 or 10 years? And just say, hey, at the end of the 10 years, we're going to meet, and if this doesn't work, we're going to go back to the other way. What do we stand to lose? I don't think it really – why not try it? I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen is that it could – I think he's onto something in regards to this split schedule. And if you go back to 1981, the Cincinnati Reds got killed by that split schedule.
Right, they did. And that possibility could happen.
But you know what I would say to the Reds? You know, you should have won one of those halves.
I mean, all they could do is do the best they could. And you have that possibility, and that possibility would be difficult. And I think that that's what's going to be the big argument against it. Well, what if they finish with the best record, but they don't win either? You know, so right. They'll be screaming about that. And you know, they have a point. But I also think that the big thing for me isn't necessarily changing the format, but it is doing away with interleague play and balancing the schedule. So the same teams in the same divisions of the same league are playing the same teams.
Correct.
And that, I think, is the most important thing. The fact that, you know, the Cubs, being in the NL Central, were able to play the American League Central, which was really, really weak. And so what ends up happening is both wild cards in the National League come out of the National League Central.
Right.
Because they get to fatten up against these weak ass teams in the American League Central.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I that's kind of what I think.
Smoltz makes a very strong point that 75% of the teams that come out of spring training know they have no chance to win it.
And that's really what this plan addresses.
That is a big problem, Leo.
Moving
forward for the game of baseball.
Yeah.
Because once that is commonly known, I just think it leads to tanking. It leads to teams selling off their teams. He makes a very good point about what happens to minor league teams, to teams that constantly are making these moves like this,
right.
and how it ultimately changes the landscape of baseball in the next 5 or 10 years because of the actions that are going on now. And
right.
So, again, I think that you're going to see some of this stuff, probably not all of it. And the reason is because Smoltz is on the rules committee, and he's speaking. I think he's speaking casually about stuff that are actually going to happen. For what it's worth, why not? Just like when they brought up interleague play, why not try this stuff? Let's see what happens. We won't really know until you try it for 5 or 10 years. And if it doesn't work, go back to the old way.
Right. Well, baseball changes at a glacial pace. But anyway.
Correct. That's true.
Now, the Boston Red Sox clinch the American League East, and they do this after the Indians clinch the Central, which is odd because the Red Sox were so much better than the Indians. But
yes.
But what was really weird about the whole thing was that the Red Sox did it in Yankee Stadium. And
yeah.
I thought that must have been difficult for our friend in New York, Jeff Weiss, to watch.
It was very difficult for Jeff, but it wasn't nearly as difficult as it was for that electrified fan in Boston that made the idiotic decision to ride on top of a L train and was electrocuted. You know, Boston, as we've covered many, many times, Boston fans are not ones that are going to be really high up there on the IQ level.
just slightly below the Philadelphia fans. You
correct,
know?
Correct.
But yeah, you're right, and that was tough. But you know what I noticed too was interesting, was that the celebration was very restrained. You know, it was very dignified. They didn't really jump all over each other until they got back into the clubhouse. They just came out, shook their hands, high five. That was it.
You know? They didn't use champagne. They used spritzer water.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they all that stuff, they did it when they got inside, and they didn't rub the Yankees fans' noses in, and they didn't rub the Yankees players' noses in it, to maybe give the Yankees players a little incentive to maybe come back and beat them in the playoffs. I don't know. That's just my two cents.
Though. Boston has had one of baseball's greatest seasons, and make no mistake about it, if they win the World Series, you can make the argument that this is maybe one of Boston Red Sox's best teams ever. And that's saying something because they've had tremendous teams over the years. So, but you're right, you know, and a September celebration sometimes leads to a November now disappointment. And so you have to be careful with these things. But yet you do need to celebrate it because you may, you know, they could be summarily dismissed in the playoffs. Who knows?
They really could. Who knows what will happen? All right. So Jeff Sullivan had a good article in FanGraphs I'd like to talk about. And it's about how the Rays, the Tampa Bay Rays, use a relief pitcher to start the game. And they call this...
Not all games. That one pitcher that's won 20 games, Snell. Yeah, that's right. Herr Snell.
Yeah, no. But they do this because they don't really have five effective starting pitchers. So what they do is they designate one or two days out of the rotation to be a bullpen day, and they start the game with most of the time Sergio Romo, who in the past has been a closer. So he'll pitch one or two innings. And the article asked the question, what has this really done for the Rays? I mean, can you quantify the effect that this has had on their team? Now, you look at the Rays, they're the third best team in a really good division. They're 16 games over 500? They're good. They aren't good enough to compete for their division, nor are they good enough to compete for a wild card, but they're better.
But they've had a torrid second half, and they would have benefited from a split schedule because they would have won the second half.
Yeah.
So the thing is that Tampa does this out of necessity. They have a suspect starting pitching staff.
They have a low payroll.
FanGraphs makes the point, I think, correctly, is that Tampa has been playing pretty well anyways. They're not so sure this would have made that much of a material difference. And again, the reason why Tampa's doing it is because they have to. If you look around baseball, only a handful of other teams have started doing this practice. I think it's more commonplace that you see position players pitching in blowout games than you are that you see this.
No, you're right. And they do this, you know, they have no payroll, and they're just doing the best they can. What is also really interesting, though, is Tampa Bay started the year 3-12.
Right.
And they came back and struggled little by little. They just took it back, and now they're 16 games over 500. And in a year where maybe there weren't so many super teams, they would be right there in the playoff discussion.
But there's one team that's 56 games over 500.
Right, exactly. So that's, you know. All right, so Corey Kluber got his 1,400th strikeout of his career in his 199th game. And this is significant because, as you pointed out, in MLB history, the only other pitcher to reach 1,400 strikeouts within his first 200 games was Randy Johnson. So that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I think to me the amazing thing is that if you would have asked me this in the form of a trivia question type of thing, such as who besides Randy Johnson has done this, I would never guess Corey Kluber. Never.
Wow.
Would you have?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I would have Nolan Ryan. A lot of pitchers come to mind, but it wouldn't have been Kluber. And to me, that's the interesting thing about all of statistical and trivial matters relating to baseball is sometimes that these anomalies, not that Kluber is an anomaly, because he definitely is not. He is a great, great pitcher. But I would have thought maybe Chris Sale would have had that, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I would have thought Max Scherzer might have had that. But
there were a lot of pitchers that would have put ahead of Kluber, just like
correct,
you would have.
Yeah. Correct.
All right. So another article from FanGraphs. A little FanGraphs heavy this week, but that's all right. This was about the walkability of Major League ballparks.
And what is walkability, Leo?
Walkability basically is the ability for players, front office people, reporters, media members, even fans to be able to walk around the neighborhood that surrounds the ballpark, and to the extent that there even is a neighborhood where you don't have to actually call for a taxi or an Uber or take a bus or drive and park, that you can actually use your feet to get to the ballpark or get around the ballpark.
And you could live, meaning it's not just bars and restaurants. There's municipalities, businesses, and you could actually do non-baseball things in and around the area of the ballpark by walking.
And out of the 30 teams, the most walkable ballpark is Fenway Park in Boston, because it's right smack dab in the middle of a neighborhood. And
not a surprise.
Not a surprise at all.
If you've ever been there, it's not a surprise at all.
And the fourth best team were the Cubs at Wrigley Field. And they're all very, very close, one through five. Are all very, very close in their ability. And if you've ever been to Wrigley Field, I mean, you know that it's the only ballpark that doesn't have a parking lot around it. You know what I
mean? Correct.
And that's what I love about it. I remember walking with my uncle up Clark Street. We're on the east side of Clark Street. And we just parked, you know, a few blocks away. And he asked me, he's like, well, how far away is the ballpark? And I said, well, it's right up here at this light. He says, he couldn't believe it. I can't see it.
Right.
I can't see the ball. I go, just wait a second.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we get to the light and there it is. You know, you turn the corner of that building and it's right in front of you.
Yeah.
It's so funny. But
you know,
but
the interesting thing that I thought was interesting anyways, is that one of the worst teams for walkability is Milwaukee. And I would have never guessed that, because while I haven't been to the new park yet, I was at the old park a couple of times. And it just seemed to me that was kind of in the middle of the city as well. I know it's not too far away, so.
It is in the middle of the city, but it is surrounded by an enormous parking lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it just sits out there, you know, in this huge, wide open space. And there's no way, you can't say, hey, I'm going to walk out and get a burger or something. You just can't do it.
For those White Sox fans out there, the White Sox park was kind of in the middle of the pack there. It would be at the very bottom if it hadn't been the changes that have been made around Comiskey to, you know, because in the old days it was just a bunch of old man bars around there. There wasn't real restaurants or but now that's completely changed. And so, you know, kudos to the city planners on the south side for, you know, doing a much better job, because really Wrigley is the mark that all teams should shoot for. The reason why I think that it's even better than Fenway is because Fenway is so claustrophobic around that ballpark. Yes, the walkability is incredible, but it's just like it's like 10 pounds crammed in a 5-pound box. At least at Wrigley, it's a little bit more spread out. However, you also have to walk a little further to move away from to find anything that's non-bar or restaurant.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, so the NL MVP is a difficult decision, but we're skipping that. That's for another time. Adrian Beltre, this was what I wanted to talk about. Adrian Beltre just passed Stan Musial and Willie Stargell in career home runs. And I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but my feeling is the case is not as clear-cut as one might think. Now, you looked at his career stats, I assume.
Yeah, state your argument, because this is crazy to me. But go
ahead.
Right, I want to hear.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm not denying that he is in a Hall of Famer.
By the way, the mic's off.
But
turn it back on.
But anyway, so he has 95 career wins above replacement, which is well beyond what any legitimate Hall of Famer would have to earn in order to get in the Hall of Fame. But if you look at what he did, you know, he's a very good player. He has two or three outstanding seasons. But I think what he really did throughout his career was just play a really long time. 21 years, he's just racking up wins above replacement. He's not inspiring his teams to win. You know what I mean? He's just a good player who is on teams that never really win a whole lot. I don't know. It just seems sort of, in the context of all the other players that we have to consider for Hall of Fame, he seems kind of ordinary.
Are you insane? Are you absolutely insane?
He seems a little ordinary.
No, he's a first ballot slam dunk Hall of Famer, 5-time Gold Glover. He's got 476 home runs, 3,200 hits. He's 95 win above replacement, maybe only 10 or 15 other major leaguers have attained this. And yes, it is. It's not just greatness. It's goodness over a long period of time. And yes, he's played a very long time, but his stats are extraordinary. He had 1,700 RBIs, almost 500.
You said he's a 5-time Gold Glover.
He was a great defensive player. A great
in 20 in 21 years.
That's right.
He won 5 Gold Gloves.
Correct. At the third base position, which if you go back when he first started playing, Brooks Robinson was playing, for crying out loud. So the fact is, he's a 95 win above replacement. He's a slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer who's had sometimes a great career, but mostly a good career for 20 seasons, 20 plus seasons.
He just looks to me like he should be in the Hall of Very Good and the Hall of Lasting a really long time. I don't know.
Okay, so then kick out Karl Yastrzemski then.
I'll
give you a whole list of players that are on par with Beltre that are enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
But if you compare him to other Hall of Famers, I think his resume deserves consideration as a Hall of Famer. I think he should probably go to the Hall of Fame. But I'm just saying that
in the context
of the players he plays with today, I don't know that he's really that outstanding. I mean, what's outstanding is his longevity.
So you're right. Compared to the players of today, he's not as good. He's almost 50 years old. He's not as good as the 25-year-olds. You're right. But statistically, he's a slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer. There will be no ifs, and buts about it. And he was an exceedingly good third baseman. Not only was he a 5-time Gold Glover, but he was a 2-time Platinum Glove, which means he was the best defensive player at the position in all the major leagues. And so he was in the All-Star.
All right.
I just think it's a slam dunk.
But it will be a slam dunk, but I think somebody needs to say what I said. That's all.
Yeah.
But anyway, all
right. I'm sure they'll say it at his induction.
All right. So now Christian Yelich of the Milwaukee Brewers, who's an MVP candidate.
Yeah, amazing.
He hit for the cycle for the second time this season, and he did it against the same team, the Cincinnati Reds. That is a Major League Baseball record.
It is. First of all, for a player to get hit for the cycle twice in one season, it's something for a player to hit for the cycle in their whole career.
Yeah.
For him to do it twice, Yelich, who started very slow, and some people, because of fantasy baseball, are not big fans of Christian Yelich, but Yelich has been a major contributor to why Milwaukee is doing as well as they are doing right now. We'll talk about them when we talk about the Cubs and the Cardinals and that whole race. But the fact is, he's been a huge contributor. He is the Milwaukee Brewers' Ben Zobrist. That's what he provides for that team.
Because he contributes in all areas. And they were writing about this in the St. Louis papers that maybe the Cardinals, instead of acquiring Ozuna, maybe they should have acquired Yelich. So I don't know.
Without a doubt.
All right. Now, another player who's kind of something we need to talk about is Gary Sanchez, the New York Yankees catcher. And he has gone from potential MVP to basically an albatross around the Yankees' neck.
Yeah, he's batting 188 this season. So having an incredible second half of 2016 when he broke into the majors, and he finished second to Michael Fulmer on the Tigers for the Rookie of the Year award. A lot of people thought he should have won it, and it was only because Fulmer won, I think, 14 or 15 games as a rookie, which is extraordinary unto itself. But Sanchez had an incredible first. He didn't play the whole year. You know, he was one of these guys where
he was injured,
but they also kind of, I think it had to do with his eligibility from a free agent standpoint. That's another subject for another day of how the baseball teams are manipulating that. But Sanchez in 2017, in his sophomore year, he basically avoided the sophomore slump. There's something that's always been bothering Sanchez throughout his whole career, and that is that he's injury prone. I don't think he's ever played at any level a full season without some kind of rinky-dink injury. Well, this year, it's not just at the plate where he is struggling mightily, batting 188. Behind the plate, he used to have like one of the best throwing arms in baseball, and this year it's just rather ordinary. So if I wasn't so stupid, I would think that a lot of things might point to the fact that he's not healthy, that maybe that groin injury that he had is lingering, and the albatross around the albatross is the fact that he's not playing at 100%. Hopefully that's a case, because Well, I'm not a Yankees fan. I've always been a Sanchez fan, and I think it's good for baseball to see players like him and Realmuto and Contreras and other young catchers start to take the mantle away from the Yadier Molinas from the catching perspective. So hopefully Sanchez is able to turn it around. If not, you know the Yankees, they'll get rid of him.
Yeah, that's true. And last thing we want to touch on as we go around the league is how the San Francisco Giants – became a $205 million flop.
Right.
Because that's what their payroll is, and they're not anywhere near a playoff spot.
No, they're not. And basically the reason they're not is because their offense has been underperforming. There's been whispers that Bochy's job as a manager is at risk in San Francisco. That's ludicrous. He's a three-time world champion. Again, a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he's a first-ballot Hall of Famer. But as a manager, he will go into the Hall of Fame. Bochy isn't the problem in San Francisco. San Francisco, they lost out on two guys that they really wanted to get, which was Giancarlo Stanton and then Ohtani signed with
Shohei
the Angels.
Ohtani.
They went all in on both of those guys and missed both of those guys. And then that has caused a problem for them where they went from having one of the best minor league systems as voted by Baseball America in 2009 to having one of the worst ones today. And the reason is that their under 25-year-old players are very ordinary and they're underperforming. They still have a lot of money tied up into Baumgartner Buster Posey they spent a fair amount of money signing Jeff Samardzija and I can't think of the other pitcher that they took from the Cincinnati Reds,
Cueto.
It just didn't work out for them. And so they're kind of in a bad spot, but they're also one of the teams that's very close to being above the salary limit where they would have to pay the luxury tax. So it's adding insult to injury. To me, this isn't a Bochy issue. This is maybe a potentially a San Francisco Giants management problem.
Yeah, a front office.
Front office.
All right, so let's move on to the Chicago Cubs, and let's begin with Addison Russell.
Right.
He is in big trouble.
Big trouble is putting it mildly.
Yeah, I think his days as a Chicago Cub are done.
I do too.
And like you wrote in the show sheet, if what we heard is true, it may be a long time before he puts on a Major League Baseball uniform again.
Yeah. Basically, his ex-wife on a blog post, and I think it was Thursday night, referenced that an ex of hers, and everybody knew who she was talking about. She didn't mention Addison by name. And she went, I read the whole thing. It was disgusting. Basically, this is a pattern of behavior that began with belittling and name calling and turned into physical abuse. And this wasn't a one time he got drunk and flew off the handle. Not that that's excusable, because it's not. Because in the Me Too movement that we're living in today, as we see from all levels of society, men have fucked up. And it's time that they pay the penalty for this. And it is entirely possible that Mr. Russell could become the face of this for baseball. I personally agree with you that he's done as a Cubs. I think that the real issue here is that how culpable are Theo and company and Jeff Hoyer and these other guys in the Cubs going back to last summer? What did they know? How much did they know? No, I'm just telling you, this is not a little.
Well, it has to be asked. But
It has to be asked that, did you just turn the cheek because he's a good player? And let me ask an even more stupid question. If this guy wasn't Addison Russell, if he was a marginal player, wouldn't he already be cut right now? I'll hang up and listen for my answer. that's how bad that I think this is. Because if everything is what it appears to be, Russell's days as a Cubs are not only over, but I think his days as a major leaguer are over. We can't sit and criticize the relief pitcher of the Houston Astros, whose name I can't think of, who on camera bounced his girlfriend's head off of a stairwell, and I saw it, and say how disgusting that was and how disgusting the Blue Jays and ultimately Houston was without condemning Russell as well. This is indefensible, and I'm sorry, Mr. Russell. It's time for you to, A, go get help, and, B, find something else to do with your life.
No, you're right. I think that's a big part of it. And It's interesting because their divorce was finalized on August 30th of this year. And right. this came out some two or three weeks later, this was out
right.
on her blog post. And, you know, you read through it, you read through the blog post. I mean, she's very descriptive in what happens. I mean, it seems pretty credible.
And it's a pattern behavior. This is not just a one-time event.
And it's gone on over a long period of time. He would have people from their hometown check up on her.
Right.
And he would confront her about stuff, and it was just really, really ugly.
Yeah.
I think earlier, you know, you asked about Epstein and the rest of the front office. I think when they took him out of the lineup a year ago, they tried to get him some help, and they tried to, you know, find ways to encourage him to get his crap together.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to stop maybe perhaps doing these kinds of things, whether he was doing them or not, or what they knew they thought he was doing. So
the story is very suspicious, Leo. I'm telling you right now.
It really is.
It's very suspicious. I'm not on the Russell front. That's pretty clear cut. But on what the Cubs knew, when they knew it, and what they did about it. If they had any idea about this last summer, to me, they handled him with kid's gloves, and that's not the way this is to be treated.
No, you're right. You're right. And, you know, it'll all come out in the wash. I mean, a lot of intelligent people follow this team, and the facts will come out.
Yep.
All right, let's get to real baseball. And now 30 games in 30 days is fine.
Was that an ESPN film?
Yeah, it was an ESPN film, 30 games in 30 days. And the Cubs went 18-12, or was it 29 games, and they went 18-11? The point is they had a really, really long stretch without a day off before they finally got one on Thursday night. And now they're playing a series – here in Chicago at the single worst named stadium in the history of baseball, Guaranteed Rate Field.
Third Rate Field.
you know, when I'm thinking about the name of this park, it may be the worst name in the history of professional sports. It's so awkward to say Guaranteed Rate Field.
It is voted one of the worst baseball fields anyways. It's got great food.
I don't know about that, but they have great food. It's good to take kids to. But by the time you get to the R in rate, you've forgotten.
It's the fifth inning.
Yeah, exactly. Or you've forgotten that you're talking about baseball.
Right.
I mean, it kills the mood. The worst name that I could think of was Scheib Park.
Yes.
And Scheib Park is much better than Guaranteed Rate
Correct.
Field.
Correct.
You know?
Correct.
I mean, U.S. Cellular, Petco.
Why don't they just call it John Wayne Gacy Field? You know?
I just can't believe. I'm sure it's a good company. I'm sure all those things are all true. But geez, that's an awful name.
Yeah. Well, I read an article this week where they went through and it was, I thought it was somewhat ridiculous. They picked the 31 ballparks from worst to first, and Comiskey, which I still call it, came in 30th out of 31. And the reason why I thought it was a little bit of a crazy list, I didn't even send it to you, is because they had Wrigley at number 9, and I'm like, that's crazy. But they did have Pittsburgh at number 1 as the clear cut.
Okay.
And so there was some good thinking, and Fenway was like 7th. So, but they really took Comiskey to task, and they said, outside of the food, there's no reason to go there. None.
Well, all right. That's tough, but I realize it's not as good as Wrigley in terms of ambience. But you know, it's got its good points.
From an amenity standpoint, it's great.
It really is.
It's also very good for kids too, by the way.
It is, and I've got kids, so there it is. So anyway, all right. So after dropping 2 straight to the Diamondbacks and the White Sox, the Brewers got to 1.5 games behind the Cubs. And as I said in the show sheet, this bitch is going to get right down to the wire.
Yeah.
And Cubs not winning the division is a real possibility. I mean, they're obviously a playoff team. And they won yesterday, and the Brewers lost, so that gets them to 2.5 games ahead of the Brewers. But you know, not winning the division is absolutely possible.
Well, you know? Not just that. When you have to say there's 7 games left in the season and the magic number is 6, that's not good, Leo.
No, it's not good.
That is not good at all.
It's not good at all, and a lot can happen. I mean, the good news is that the Cubs don't play the Brewers, and the Brewers seem to play them really well. you know. But
the Cubs are a wounded duck right now, and I'm gonna go out on a limb, a double steel reinforced limb, and say that the Cubs are not going to fare very well come postseason. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they were knocked out once their first round starts. And that is the reason is because they have two real problems with the team, right? At least right now. And the biggest problem is their bullpen is in disarray.
It is
absolute disarray. They don't really have a true closer. That's a major problem. Milwaukee does. Milwaukee has a great bullpen. And from a hitting standpoint, there's just too many games that they played this year. I haven't done an analysis, but I will. But there's too many games where they're losing 5 and 6 to 1. They're just not. They're not getting.
They're not scoring. Their offense has just vanished.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so if someone said, "Hey, you got to bet on what's going to happen," I don't believe the Cubs are going to be the National League representative, and that's tragedy because it's anybody's to take. Not that they're going to beat the American League, because I don't think that they will. I believe the world champion comes out of the American League again this year. But I just think that it's just been bad luck more than anything else. I think for the last couple of years, there's been a deterioration in that bullpen that they haven't really addressed, except for Band-Aid closer deals that they've, you know.
Well, they've been forced to. They've lost a lot of relievers to injury. I mean, it's
yeah, but organically, the guys that they've tried to bring up within the system are not getting the job done either. So it's complicated. But the reality is the Cubs have a big area in the offseason to address when it comes to that. Because when you look from a hitting side of the ball, they've got a great offense. They just kind of have underperformed.
Well, I think that it what you say is certainly possible, but I also think the alternative is also possible, that they, you know, I've never seen a team get up off the mat better than the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
This is a team that does not lose for extended periods of time.
That's true. That is true. That's full kudos to the manager, Madden, who is also,
right,
I have read rumors that they potentially need to make a change there. And I think that's crazy.
No, you don't. It is crazy.
This is Sparky Anderson 101. The manager is always the manager. The manager typically doesn't change, and I've criticized Madden for how he's handled bullpens, but there's a lot that he does extremely well that they're not going to get if they go hire some 35-year-old manager, and that's
right,
what some of these fans are shooting for. It's not Madden. It's not Bruce Bochy. It's certainly not Mike Socia in California for the Angels either. These guys are all solid managers. You can go ahead and fire them. But that's not going to fix your problem.
But it's not. Yeah, it doesn't fix your problem because Madden created the culture that allows the Cubs to win.
So that won us a world championship, by the way.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. And he rotates guys in and out of the lineup to get them rest.
Right.
So as a result, the Cubs tend to be injury free and they tend to be fresher. So I think that Madden will be safe. He's not going to be managing anywhere else next year. But it's interesting.
Your friend in St. Louis made a comment about the final three games in Wrigley next week weekend against the Cardinals. Why don't you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, he very badly wants those three games between the Cardinals and the Cubs, the last three games of the season. He wants those games to matter in terms of playoff implications, whether it matters for the Cubs to win the division or the Cardinals to win the wild card. He wants those three games to mean something, and I completely agree.
Right.
I mean, when it comes right down to it, I want drama. I want human sort of emotion.
Yeah.
I want to see that, and hopefully we will see that. We didn't get to see it last year when those teams faced off against each other in the second-to-last series of the season. I mean, the Cardinals were, for all intents and purposes, done.
Right.
And the Cubs managed to clinch in their stadium.
So,
I want to see something happen.
The odds are you will. Remember, of the three teams, Milwaukee, Chicago, and St. Louis, the Cardinals have the toughest schedule. They have to play Milwaukee and the Cubs for the remaining games. Milwaukee has to play Pittsburgh and St. Louis. And we get away with playing Milwaukee plays Detroit and St. Louis. They close out in Detroit. And we play Pittsburgh and St. Louis. I would say St. Louis has the toughest road to hoe, and because all of their games are going to be meaningful. St. Louis controls this. So you can tell your friend it's up to the Cardinals for that to happen.
And he's well aware of it. I mean, my friend, the Cardinals fan, Al Chanot is his name. He's a mail carrier, and he's one of the finest baseball fans I've ever met.
Hey, Al.
Really smart guy.
Nice to talk to you, Al.
All right, so Chris Bryant is finding his stroke, and not a moment too soon.
Right.
Jim DeShays called a home run he hit against the Diamondbacks on the 17th, which is pretty funny. And they're sitting there watching him, and it is at bat, and Jim DeShays says he's going to hit a home run right now.
Correct.
And he did.
It was,
it was
the Chris Bryant called shot, and it was just, you know, for some teams, that would be their highlight of their season. That was kind of a magical moment for the Cubs. But I think the biggest issue is Chris Bryant starting to find his stroke, which it couldn't come at a better time for us.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding. So. No kidding. All right. Joe Madden ripped Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras for not hustling when Contreras crushed a line drive. He thought it was a home run when it hit off the top of the wall. And he didn't hustle out of the box and barely made it to second base for the double. And Madden addressed it as horrible in the post game.
As it was, I'll tell you right now, if that was Sparky, he would have benched him. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, he would have benched him.
He would have sat him down. And, you know, I don't think Madden has that luxury now, but that was really, really bad. That was like Jose Bautista-like. And Wilson, you got to knock that stuff off. The very next night, by the way, I saw Baez put one, you know, deep into the outfield, and he did the same exact thing, by the way.
He did the same thing, but so
it's a fine line.
It is a fine line for these players, and he did know that his was out by a significant margin.
Yeah.
But nevertheless,
right.
You know, so now Brandon Morrow, our great closer, he is out for the year. He's done. And that is a huge blow to the Cubs bullpen, because who's going to close these games in critical situations in the playoffs?
Well, it's not Carl Edwards Jr., I can tell you that much.
Well, he pitched well yesterday.
He did until the second hitter. Let's put it this way. You can ask my wife. Every time Carl takes the mound, I leave the room when the TV's on. I'm not kidding you. I can't watch it. He can't throw a strike and to save his life. And, yes, he got out of the sixth inning yesterday, and that's probably – or whatever the inning – I think it was the sixth or sixth or seventh. That's the best place for him, because he is just a train wreck, and I can't wait till he's off the team. I hate to say it.
Well, with the way that the bullpen is right now, he will be used in meaningful innings, and that's just all there is to it.
I know. What's going on this week in baseball?
All right, I got a good one. This one you're going to like. September 22nd, 1966, with only 413 patrons in attendance to see the Yankees lose to the White Sox. This is 66.
Holy cow.
The team's head of media relations denies Red Barber's request for a camera to scan the empty stands.
The
veteran broadcaster reportedly loses his job when he continues to tell the audience, quote, "I don't know what the paid attendance is today, but whatever it is the smallest crowd in the history of Yankee Stadium, and this crowd is the story, not the game." And he lost his job.
And Red is the picture of our icon of our show.
He is. He is.
And Red was right. And that wouldn't happen today in the 24-hour news cycle. It would be covered by 400 different countries, or whoever is following the game of baseball. Red, that's ridiculous. I'm saddened to hear that.